south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Before we get started today, I'd like to mention to all you folks who've been writing me emails over the years saying, Johnny, why don't you have Facebook? Why don't you have Twaddle or LinkedIn or any of that anti-social media stuff? And you know what? I don't even have a smartphone. Though even the dumb ones are kind of smart these days, right? People even say, Johnny, what are you, a Luddite? Well, just the fact that I'm doing this radio show slash podcast using the internet and fairly high-tech equipment proves I'm not that much of a Luddite. So then why don't I go for all that anti-social media crap? Well, for one thing, I hate Google. I never use it. Well, I take that back. I actually use it all the time, like everyone else, except I do my searches through startpage.com. And their search engine is directly linked to Google, so when you search anything, your IP address is stripped off, so Google has no idea who's doing the search. So they can't catalog you, do a timeline on you, and store and track your location. Did you know that every time you turn on your smartphone or check anything on Google, Google stores that timeline from the very first day you started using Google on your phone or on your computer? I don't like that. Another reason I hate Google and use it only through a start mail search, which strips off my IP address, is that I hate the idea that Google stores your search history across all of your devices on a separate database. So even if you delete your search history and your phone history, Google still stores it all until you delete everything on every one of your devices. And still, it's really never gone and always available for them to sell to marketers. In fact, they'll market to you themselves. Another thing I hate is Google creates an advertising profile on everyone. It never goes away and they sell it to the highest bidder. So they've got your location, your gender, your age, your hobbies, your career, your interests, your relationship status, your weight, your buying preferences, of course. And that's really valuable to them. And they've got the information on every app and extension you've ever used. How often you used them, where you used them, who you shared them with, the people you send links to and interact with, who you talk to on Facebook, what countries you speak with and to whom, and what time you go to sleep at night. Not only that, Google stores all of your YouTube history, so they know whether you're going to be a parent soon, if you're old, if you're conservative, if you're progressive, if you're Christian, Jewish, Muslim, what kind of self-help topics and psychological issues you're interested in, if you're depressed, if you're suicidal, if you're anorexic, what drugs you order, which ones you're checking out. All of that becomes part of your profile, like it or not, and thus your personality is cataloged with sweeping generalizations based on that data. By the way, just recently there was a guy who decided to check what Google, Facebook, LinkedIn, and all of them were storing on him or anything related to him. He wanted to see what data they had available to sell to the highest bidder. So he went directly to Google and asked them if he could have a download of his file, and guess how big it was? 5.5 gigabytes. That's huge. That's roughly 3 million average Word documents. So he was able to download all that information Google had on him through something called Google Takeout, and you can do it too. He found out this link included his bookmarks, his emails, his contacts, his Google Drive files, his YouTube videos, every photo he's taken on his phone, and every photo he's ever received. The businesses he's bought from, all the products he's bought through Google and Amazon, all the special dates he's bookmarked on his calendar, the Google Hangout sessions he was involved in, including the audio data and his location history too, every time he did a Google search, including every audio clip and piece of music he's listened to, the Google books he's purchased, all the organizations and groups he's been in contact with, all the websites he created, all the phones he's owned all the way back to the early ones, plus all the pages and PDFs he's downloaded and shared with people, and the pages and PDFs people sent him too, and believe it or not, all the physical steps he's made through each and every day, meaning all of his day-to-day movements since he's been using Google can be plotted on Google Maps. So now you know how Google can have 5 gigs or more of data on each and every one of us. By the way, did you know that repulsive little Schmuckerberg's Facebook has a similar app where you can download all of the information they have on you? For Facebook users, they have an average of 400 megabytes on you, enough for about 100,000 average Word documents. That includes every single message you've ever sent or have been sent, every file you've sent or have been sent, all the contacts in your phone, all your phones, and all the audio messages you've ever sent or were sent. Not only that, Facebook stores what it thinks you might be interested in based on things you've liked and what your friends have been talking about. Like, for example, pizza, baseball, the World Cup, penis extenders, Viagra, and Colombian girls. So if you're thinking you better be careful about what you post, well, it's too late for that. The privacy ship sailed a long time ago. Not to mention, for some really dumb reason, they also store all those stupid little smart, happy, and sad emojis you ever sent anyone on Facebook. Surely, there must be an algorithm they created that determines by your emojis whether you're psychologically deranged or not. And also, like Google, Facebook also timestamps and locates you every time you send a message. Worse yet, they store all the apps you've ever connected to on your Facebook account. They log what you're interested in based on certain keywords like politics, gold, prepping, World War II, cryptocurrency, whatever. And you know, Windows 10 does pretty much the same thing, unless you go into the settings and turn off all the snooping features. If you don't, they'll track where you are, what apps you've used, what you've installed, and what you use them for. Microsoft will have access to your webcam and microphone at any time. They'll have all your contacts, your emails, your calendars, your call history, your messages, anything you've received, the files you download, the games you play, your photos, your videos, your music, your search history, your browsing history, even what radio stations you listen to, and all your Skype and WhatsApp information too. So bottom line, when people say, Johnny, what's wrong with you? Join the modern age. You're going to have to get a smartphone, get on Facebook and Twitter for your own good. Oh, and you'll definitely need LinkedIn. You know, in my defense, I'll sometimes tell people, that is, when it's worth actually saying anything, because most of these people are absolutely addicted to their devices. It's been proven over and over again, and it's a fact, that people actually have withdrawals, like an addict, if they're without their devices for even just a few hours. Anyway, whenever I'm with people and a subject comes up, usually after they've asked me for my Facebook or WhatsApp and they find out I don't even have a smartphone, when I'm in that situation, I don't criticize anyone for using that stuff. Though sometimes if the person's smart and receptive, especially if they're cautious and informed in other areas of their lives, like anti-fluoride, GMO, they're concerned about their environment, watch what they put into their bodies and all that, then I just might bring up those points I just did with you, but I phrase them in a different way. I might say something like, tell me, would you let the U.S. government or any government or a corporation or your boss at work or let's say your landlord or your car dealer put cameras or microphones in your house or car? Would you let anyone put location trackers on you 24/7? Would you let your government, landlord, or boss read all your personal emails? Would you let the government, your boss, or people you don't even know look at a list of everything you've ever bought or searched on the internet? Well, the average, or I should say above average person, over, I'd say, 30 or 40 years old, will say, no way, are you nuts? However, the younger generations, people under 30, ones that were practically born with a smartphone in their hands, they have to think about it a minute, because they were brought up in the surveillance state, though they don't see it that way, and are used to it. They're the I've got nothing to hide generation, which shows they obviously don't know what the hell they're talking about. Yep, the old fallback position for technology is I've got nothing to hide. But what I failed to mention in that previous rant, on purpose I might add, the number one search topic on the internet, which can and will come back to bite millions upon millions of people in the ass. Porn, of all stripes and colors. So then where does the under 30 crowd get off saying they've got nothing to hide when their porn search histories are all over the net? You know, it's the under 30 crowd that are most likely to be actively interviewing. Don't they realize that's the kind of homework corporate headhunters and human resource departments are actively sifting through? Not to mention human resource departments are checking out social media platforms to both monitor existing employees and prospective employees too. These days, they have that information before you even walk in the door for that face-to-face interview. And often that's why you get a rejection letter instead of a face-to-face interview. Bottom line, the consequences, the secondary and tertiary effects, of having all your data out there in the ether, out there for any hacker to get, available to governments and for sale to the highest corporate bidders could really complicate a person's life and affect things behind the scenes that in many cases a person would not even be aware of. Too bad all those smartphones and devices are like hydras. You cut off one head and two more grow back. You've seen that movie, right? Jason and the Argonauts? Now, there's a retro guilty pleasure watching old Ray Harryhausen stop-action movies from the 60s. Ah, those were the days of the Saturday matinees for kids. You'd leave the house at 9 in the morning, your mom would give you a buck, you'd go to the Orpheum Theater and watch bad Roger Corman, Vincent Price, and Ray Harryhausen movies. You'd watch those movies with your grade school buddies, whose moms also gave a buck to each of them. And as long as you were back home by sundown, everything was cool, and it was always cool. Oh, and back then, a buck covered the show. Some popcorn, a soda, a hot dog, and some milk duds. Of course, today it would cost at least 10 bucks. But if a parent did that today, that is, shove a 10 or 12-year-old kid out the door at 9, all by himself in the big city, for sure someone would call child services. But I digress as usual. Anyway, speaking of guilty pleasures, just in the last couple weeks, watching a red-faced Mark Schmuckerberg being filleted all over the internet for that gigantic Facebook data breach, well, I'm not going to say I told you so. Well, guess what? My data was not available to get breached. How about yours? You worried yet? You should be. But, you know, this is a show about living in Latin America, right? So what about Latin Americans? Well, as mentioned in previous shows, they're absolutely addicted to Facebook, Twitter, and even more so to WhatsApp. However, here's the thing. When you read about the data of an American or European person being worth around $10,000, to marketers and ad men, that is, well, just like food, medical costs, and a lot of other things here in Latin America, marketers and ad men, or is it ad persons now? I wouldn't know. I'm not PC, you know. Anyway, they value the debts on the average Latin American at about 1/5 to 1/10 of a first world person's debts. It's all about income, disposable income, and spending habits, of course. And as mentioned previously, Latinos will give up their debts for a slice of pizza. Seems like the only Latinos who have any concern at all for the privacy issue are ones who've been extorted by cell phone. A lot of that going on. And or Latinos who've had their credit or debit cards cloned. Or saddled with false charges on their credit card statements because someone hacked their numbers. I hear that story over and over again. I don't think there's a single person here in Latin America with a credit card who hasn't been screwed around somehow. And why not, since Latinos with credit or debit cards use them for practically everything. In fact, I've seen them charge as little as $1 on a credit card. Just go to McDonald's or Dunkin' Donuts and you'll see what I mean. Yep, they've got Dunkin' Donuts all over the place here in Latin America now. It's amazing most establishments do take credit cards, yet very few of them have a sign that posts a minimum charge. I don't know what the minimum charge is up in the States, but I think it's at least 10 bucks, right? So anyway, if you're into credit card tomfoolery, does anyone but Charles Dickens use that word anymore? Must have been a very bad con man dude named Tom way back when, huh? Tomfoolery aside, you know, there's a million and one ways to get someone's credit card number here in Latin America. I mean, every time you hand your credit card over to a lowly cashier, that's a weak spot in the credit card security apparatus. Especially, for example, if you're at a restaurant and you hand your credit card over to the waiter and he walks off with it. Because, you know, in a lot of restaurants, they have to swipe the card at the cash register. Or it could be on the other side of the room or in a different room altogether. Another vulnerability in the credit card security apparatus. That's how they can get that supposedly secret little 3 or 4 number code on the back of the card. You need that, you know, to order stuff online. So my advice, yes, I have a debit card. I've had it for years, I've never had it cloned, and I've never had an unauthorized charge. And you want to know why? So far, I've only used it to withdraw cash at ATM machines. And even when I withdraw from an ATM machine, I have a certain practice that I stick to. Unless it's an absolute emergency, I will not withdraw money from an ATM machine unless it's either attached to a bank, outside of a bank, or right next to a bank. I know you've heard me say this before, but it bears repeating because credit card fraud is growing by leaps and bounds. That's why I always avoid ATMs that are out in the middle of nowhere or stuck in a little cubby hole somewhere on the street. So I stick to that. Although once a very strange thing happened. I went to an ATM machine and it wouldn't allow me to withdraw any money. However, the machine did let me check my account to see the balance. Next day, I went down to the bank and they told me my card was reported stolen. Then I pulled it out and said, "This is stolen? How could it be? It's in my hand." She said, "A couple of days ago, we blocked it. Someone called it in as stolen." And I asked, who reported it stolen. She said, I don't have that information right now. So they took the old one, and I had to wait a couple of days for them to reissue a new one with different numbers. The mystery here is, how'd that happen? And later, when I picked up the card, I pushed. I said, come on, you got to tell me, who put the call in? To do that, someone would have to call in with a lot of personal information. She agreed and left her little cubbyhole desk for around a half an hour and came back and said, we think someone at the bank here may have inadvertently pressed the wrong button and blocked it. Which makes you wonder, who can you trust? If bankers behind the scenes can make stupid mistakes like that, all I can say is hip hip for Bitcoin and cryptos, because in the end, they eliminate banks completely. No wonder all the big banks in the world are scared poopless. By the way, most ATMs in Latin America will let you take out up to $300 a day, US, and around $300 in the local funny money. Now, I don't know what your spending habits are, but if you try to stick close to my plan, that is, don't use your credit card except to take money out of the ATM, the thing is, if you can't live on $300 a day, or a lot less, I got a feeling you're smack dab on the gringo tourist trail. Costa Rica, Panama City, Cancun, San Miguel Allende, Medellin, Colombia, Rio de Janeiro. You know the drill. The fact is, if you're here in Latin America and you're single, and you can't live on less than $100 a day, of course I'm talking about if you're renting and not in a hotel, I'd say you're definitely doing something wrong. All right, let's move on. But before I forget, I want to mention that if you go to thenewexpat.com, you can click on Johnny's seminar link and find out all about my July 2018 Expat Insider Seminar. Again, smack dab in the Altiplano, 5,000 feet above sea level, perfect spring weather all year round, just exactly the place most gringos and expats absolutely prefer to be. That is, if they've even heard about the Altiplano, because it took me 5 years here in Latin America before I got clued in. The places we'll be visiting at the Expat Insider Seminar are only about an hour and a half by car, away from the ocean, the beach, the sand, the sun, and the fun. So you can live in the Altiplano and yet be a short drive from the beach, sweating your butt off. For some, that's what vacations are all about. Now, you've heard me talk about the Altiplano, and you've heard me say there ain't much of it. I'd say only about 3% of Latin America. And you know, all the ancient cities the Aztecs, Incas, and Mayans had, at least most all the really big ones, were in the Altiplano. Nope, they weren't stupid. Not by a long shot. In fact, you know, if you ever visited Mexico City, not my favorite place, I mean, it's one of the most overpopulated cities in the world and the most pollution too. And of course, the usual terrible Latin city planning, if you could call it planning at all. Anyway, that's smack dab in the Mexican Altiplano. Of course, the metro area has got 20 million people now, vastly overtaxing the resources. I don't even want to think about how they're getting their drinking water. And you know, this is Latin America, so only about one in three houses or businesses properly treats their sewage runoff. Ugh. Anyway, not to ruin your appetite here, there's Altiplano and there's Altiplano, the kind you don't want to live in, like Mexico City, Tegucigalpa, Honduras, and Lima, Peru. Then you have dozens and dozens of medium and small-sized Latin cities in the Altiplano that are absolutely great for expats and gringos with a plan B. So come down to my July 2018 Expat Insider Seminar and see it for yourself. It's Saturday, July 7th through Thursday, July 12th. It's a guaranteed fast-tracked education for gringos and expats you'll never get anywhere else. So again, just go to www.thenewexpat.com, click on Johnny's seminar link, and find out how to get in on the early bird discounts. That means for a single person attending, you save $500 off the regular cost. And for two people sharing double occupancy, you get $1,000 off the regular price. And while you're perusing that info on the newexpat.com website, you'll also see how to kill two birds with one stone by coming down to the seminar and at the same time spend a few extra days in Guatemala applying for your permanent or temporary residency. That'll save you a lot of time and money over trying to do it at a later date. Plus, you know, the windows of opportunity are closing on those residency programs. Already, just in the last year or so, many Latin residency programs have gotten tougher. There's more hoops to jump through, with none of them having been made easier, only more difficult. And I guarantee you, in time, the same thing's going to happen to Guatemala's residency program. In fact, it looks very obvious that the U.S. State Department is putting pressure on Latin countries to make it tougher for American citizens to leave the proverbial barn. You know what I mean. Oh, and while you're checking out the info, you'll also see those famous John Galt pre- and post-seminar trips. And on those journeys, you'll be staying at the most beautiful lake in the world, Lake Atitlan. Hey, you don't have to believe me when I say it's the most beautiful lake in the world. Check it out on the internet. There are thousands of world travelers who will testify to that fact. And as for the value of going on one or both of those John Galt trips, if you're interested at all in starting a brick-and-mortar business, or an internet business selling local items around the world, you'll see dozens and dozens of very cool locally made items, sure to spark a lot of ideas involving the export of products. Think Amazon, eBay, Overstock.com, etc. So whether part of your plan B is looking for business opportunities or not, you'll really want to go on one or both of those John Galt trips, which means you'll have to tack on 3 or 4 days to the beginning or end of the seminar or both. Believe me, you won't regret it. All right, here's something that gringos and expats have sent me emails about. When they're here in Latin America, especially on the gringo tourist trail or in Mexico, the locals have seen lots of gringos and are emboldened by that, so they'll try their English on you. However, when you're south of the border, as I like to say, that means south of the Mexican border, there are very few places where the local Latins know enough English to converse with you. The exceptions being Costa Rica, where everyone wants to speak to you in English, and Belize, where English is their main language, and Panama, where especially if you're in Panama City, practically every little store owner has enough English to converse with. However, in the rest of Latin America, south of the border, that is, the average Latino or Latina will only know a few words of English, even though a lot of them say they take English at school. In some schools, it's mandatory, too. But just like you were forced to take French or Spanish in high school or junior high, well, if you only took a semester or two and your heart wasn't in it and you didn't have a native speaker teaching it to you, and when the semester's through, you've got no one to practice with, forget about it. After a while, it just fades away. I know what I'm talking about. In high school, I took French for a year. And when I went to France, the locals wouldn't give me the time of day. In fact, I think they were laughing at me behind my back. Of course, the French are snobs personified, especially in Paris, but still, it didn't take long for me to get embarrassed into never using it again and slipping right back into English. And most French people understand English, but they won't acknowledge it. They'll ignore you. Anyone who visits France knows that already. Now, here in Latin America, there's none of that language snobbery. And off the gringo trail, where Latinos rarely see gringos, they feel a bit embarrassed to try any English out on you. Generally, you have to prod them or get to know them a bit. And believe me, their vocabulary is sometimes not more than 20 words, even though every last one of them has t-shirts and sweatshirts with English sayings on them. Now, a couple of decades ago, when I first got down here off the gringo trail, the only English phrase most all Latinos seemed to know was, "Nice to meet you." And then I noticed as the years went by and 50 or 100 stations of U.S. cable TV hit Latin homes, translated of course, a few other English words and phrases started to come into common usage. Not many, just a few. For example, my God, Dios mío in Spanish. My God. That's something you never heard 10 years ago. But you see, lately, especially in the last couple of years, it's become very cool to know a few English words, just a few. Not to use with gringos particularly, but to use amongst themselves. Like, for example, only a year or two ago, you never heard Latin people say, okay. And now it's so common, you even hear the cleaning ladies and the shoeshine boys saying it. That's right, the simple word, okay. Now, in Spanish, you'll hear the words muy bien over and over again. That means very good. Or just bien, meaning good. In fact, you almost can't have a conversation with a Latino without him throwing in a few muy biens or bien, bien. And that's their version of okay. But these days, just in the past year or so, I'm finding I practically can't get through a Spanish conversation without the other guy saying okay. By the way, the origin of okay, or the very first usage of it, goes back to the 1830s. But I remember once having a talk with my dad. He said, no, that's an old war term. Means zero kills. So when you went on patrol and you came back and your CO said, how many casualties? If you said okay, that meant zero kills. A very good thing, so okay morphed into a word for good. Anyway, I had that conversation with my dad way before the internet, thus way before you could look it up on Wikipedia. Anyway, he died in the mid-80s, so I never got to lay that on him. But he liked that story, and I liked it too. It's a lot cooler than the real story of some guy putting it in a newspaper article in the 1830s. Yep, zero kills. I like that a lot better, even if it's wrong. Which just goes to show a lot of stuff we're firmly convinced is true is mierda del toro. But I digress as usual. Where are we? Oh yeah, talking about English words that somehow creep into the Spanish vernacular. Well, here's one that'll blow your mind. It just started creeping in the last couple months. The word picky. Now, a lot of times, the few English words that seem to permanently creep into the language here come by way of popular Spanish music. And for young people today, the most popular Spanish music genre is that deplorable reggaeton. Man, does it suck. And they blast it out everywhere. Bars, discos, weddings, quince años parties, malls, gyms. You just can't avoid it. Oh, and did I tell you that it sucks? Man, does it suck. And if you, like me, think rap and hip-hop really sucks, well, let me tell you, reggaeton lyrics make rap and hip-hop lyrics look like Shakespeare. You see, the missing links that make this violent, sexist, misogynist crap they call reggaeton, they like to stick a few English words in there because that's all the fashion these days. Let me see, how can I explain this? All right, here it is. Just picture the most monotonous rap song you can think of with George Bush Jr. on crack writing the lyrics. Anyway, right now there's a big reggaeton hit sweeping through Latin America called Picky Picky. And that's why the English word picky is quickly disseminating through Latin America. By the way, almost all the big reggaeton hits are recorded, guess where? In Miami. Because as it turns out, most of the big-time reggaetoneros, the so-called artists, man, what an insult to artists everywhere. They're more like fartists. Anyway, most are illegals in the U.S. or their parents came there illegally. And they live in big city Latin barrios in the States. And how do I know that? Well, they interview these guys on the music channels here in Latin America all the time. And they're more than willing to tell those stories. They're the blinged out, neck tattooed, gold tooth rack type who, if they hadn't got lucky in the music biz, would be ganged up selling drugs, stealing cars, and knocking up your daughters. That's exactly what they preach in their songs. Speaking of drugs, we were speaking of drugs, weren't we? Well, maybe not, but speaking of drugs, I was at an Easter party. They call it Semana Santa here. And I was sitting around with some Latin college kids, and one of the girls said, you know, I never tried marijuana. I want to try it, she says, but I'm afraid to. Then she said, it must not be too bad. They're legalizing it up in the Estados Unidos, correct? And I said, yeah, that's right. Then she said, what's it like? And then one of the Latino guys jumped in and said, I can answer that. When we smoke it, he was talking about Latinos, we can drink more. But when gringos smoke it, they become more calm and easygoing and they shift into mañana time. And I thought, man, you know, he's 100% right. Then I said, are you insinuating gringos are high-strung and uptight? And he said, yeah, well, the ones I've met are, for the most part. So I said, maybe every gringo getting off the plane at the airport should get a complimentary doobie. He smiled and said, that would work. By the way, this wasn't your typical Latin kid. His parents were rich. He'd been to university up in the States and had us down cold.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, you can schedule a one-on-one phone call with me. But first, download my free Plan B questionnaire at www.thenewexpat.com. Better yet, if you want to get your Plan B going from right up there in the States, just sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Get the perfect Plan B blueprint by going to theexpatfiles.com/academy. Nos vemos.